Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to yet another episode of Gym Class All Stars. Happy 6 month anniversary, Robbie. We made it half a year. We haven't killed each other yet.
Happy
But
Valentine's Day.
yeah, happy Valentine's Day. I'm glad you and I are together on it, of course.
Of course.
We do have some exciting news, though. We have a new friend of the show, a little bit of a sponsorship, as you may see. We're now partnered with the new app Viget. It is a free-to-play sports betting application that Robbie and I will be using, and we'll be coming to you live with our picks, our thoughts on it, and we'll be doing a lot of contests, giveaways through it. So what we're saying is we'll be posting information about it later on our social media, but we would recommend using our referral code when you sign up and help support the show. So that's our little announcement, and if you're a dedicated fan, I hope you know how much this means to us because it really does. They're a great app. Definitely check them out. Now, Viget is a great app, but that's Super Bowl. Not really a great fun time for you and
Little
I.
less than great.
I guess it should have been more expected from us, but I'm just extremely disappointed. I really thought that game was going to be a bit more of a shootout and not just Patrick Mahomes trying not to die the entire game.
Yeah, I mean the biggest storyline of the entire Super Bowl, like despite Brady getting seventh championship, is how bad the Chiefs offensive line performed. I mean, they It seemed like every single play, Patrick Mahomes was running for his life on a bum foot, like already. So, I mean, right when they announced that they had moved their guard to the outside tackle position and had a new guy slotting in a guard, I was like, oh, this is the wrong time to do this. But I don't know if it was out of necessity or what, injury, COVID, whatever. But right from the get-go, I was like, this doesn't sound great. And it was not. I mean, you saw it. The Chiefs, the Pat Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Travis Kelce, Chiefs did not score a touchdown in the playoffs. That's insane. 9 points, 31-9. Kansas City, the offense couldn't get going because of how much scrambling Mahomes had to do, didn't have a chance to sit in the pocket, and the Buccaneers defense playing spectacular, capped off by Antoine Whitfield making the eye contact with Tyreek Hill. You can say all you want about how poorly the Chiefs performed, but you absolutely have to talk about how well Tom Brady performed in victory number seven. He now has more championships than any NFL franchise.
Yeah, and to do it in his first year in Tampa. Granted, everything was a little bit set up for him with, a great defense, seemed to have a lot of pieces at the wide receiver core. But middle of the season, being 7-5, there are definitely a lot of doubts about them. I'd be the first to say it. I know you'd agree with them. But to go on a 7-0 run for the rest of the season, win the Super Bowl, that's impressive. You have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think it's also something to be said for the fact that that Super Bowl had touchdowns from Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Brown, and good old playoff Lenny Leonard Fournette.
Lombardi Lenny.
You had a guy who was a Fox analyst, a guy who was out of the league and literally having mental breakdowns, and then another guy who was getting cut by the Jaguars of all teams. And these guys were very important contributors to a Super Bowl win. I gotta say though, and I know we all love to not give Tom Brady praise, and Tom Brady deserves all the praise in that game. He played spectacular. We gotta talk though about Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes, that photo of him basically parallel with the ground, throwing the ball up into the end zone on fourth down, needs to be hung in the NFL Hall of Fame right now. Honestly, that dude gave it his all on a bum foot and was making plays that just were so disappointing. He was throwing it in receivers that were dropping balls. I was internally screaming that entire game because Patrick Mahomes was really, really putting everything out there when he honestly had no reason to do that.
In terms of effort, you have to talk about this as one of the all-time great NFL games. I mean, like we said, running all over the place, making these insane plays that he's doing everything in his part to have the Chiefs offense benefit from, and unfortunately didn't come through. His teammates, his receivers couldn't catch, didn't have a lot of time in the pocket, like we said. But man, that dude did everything he could. You can't, the fact that they didn't score a touchdown, you can't pin solely on Mahomes. He gave it his all. You know the Chiefs are going to be a threat for a long time to come. That offense is not going anywhere. But Tom Brady has now surpassed both the New England Patriots and the Pittsburgh Steelers in Super Bowls. He does that owning all of the New England Patriots Super Bowls in the process. Shout out to Super Bowl Tom. The greatest pass was throwing the Lombardi Trophy from his boat to Gronk's, though. That was awesome.
We got to talk about the two more things about that. First and foremost, Tom Brady's won so many championships that he gives no shits about the trophy. Nope. Between Gronk using it as a baseball bat and having a dent in that thing, or throwing it between boats, like, good on you. But I'd be terrified to even move that thing. Like, dropping it would probably scare me silly. On top of that, though, the man was definitely drunk on a bit of avocado tequila. And honestly, the video of him coming to shore, hilarious. But also, like, good on him. He should 100% be celebrating. The man's 43 and still winning big games when needed. The second thing that I want to talk about is, okay, you have the Chiefs and the Bucks. The Bucks are a little interesting because they're, for the most part, full of a lot of young talents, Brady being that only exception.
Wrong.
People like Shaq Barrett, Devin White, Chris Godwin, Mike Evans. You have all this talent, but what do you do with it? In the sense that I think a lot of these guys are going to want their paydays. How do you keep this team together, or at least, if you can't, fill in those gaps from these very important contributors?
Well, it's a lot of prioritizing that you're going to have to do. You're not going to get able to bring everybody back. That's the biggest problem in the NFL with long stretches of dominance by teams, that it is so difficult to keep the roster together. But you got to keep the big pieces. You know, Mike Evans has to stay. Chris Godwin, you have to have at least two superstar receivers, and Evans and Godwin are the two that belong, or the two that deserve to be there. If you lose Antonio Brown, at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world. He didn't do a whole lot for you. Defensively, though, they played great in the Super Bowl, but they were never like necessarily an elite level defense all year. So you need to keep your core pieces. You need to keep the young guys. I mean, Winfield's going to be huge for you in the future. He played a fantastic game. It's what you can't replace, and it's what you could potentially have trouble replacing if you're forced to. I think they're in a good spot. I think a lot of these players are going to potentially want to come back. You know, Brady's still going to be here. They're going to be competing for Super Bowls. Maybe not everybody takes pay cuts, but some will. And that's important when you're building a team to try and do your best to dominate. Some guys are going to have to make sacrifices along the way.
So that makes a lot of sense. I honestly think the way the Bucks are is kind of like the Chiefs last year, where they have those talents. I think a lot of people are going to be inclined to stay because, okay, they're winning. They have Tom Brady. Their coaching staff is very well built. But let's go to the other team, the Chiefs. Last year had that nice run to the Super Bowl, won. Definitely had a little bit of offseason drama with like Chris Jones, like potentially wanting a payday. They were able to keep a lot of their core pieces around, which is why they had so much success this season up until the Super Bowl. So has that honeymoon phase sort of worn off, and are people on that team going to start looking for paydays? I'm not saying like Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill or even Mahomes, obviously, because they're kind of locked in. But these other pieces that maybe don't get enough credits, I mean, maybe Tyrann Mathieu, or I don't know these contract situations, but I'm sort of just spitballing. These guys who, they were happy that they won the Super Bowl. They saw the value of the team. Now that you lose, though, and granted, you weren't at full force, I feel like that adds a little bit of complexion to the offseason, especially for the Chiefs.
I think you're absolutely right. I think the honeymoon phase is, in fact, over in Kansas City. You're not going to see any household names leaving. You're not going to see Mahomes or Kelce or Hill getting moved. But the guys you brought in as the extra pieces, obviously Le'Veon Bell, someone like that is gone. Some of these other names, you know, Tyrann Mathieu could very much be in a situation where if he gets offered a big payday when his contract's up, he has to think about taking it, because you got to the top of the mountain once, but getting there consistently, like I said, it's very, very difficult. But they lost. There's a clear chink in the armor now. Unless the team is committed to bringing in the right pieces, some of the other, you know, guys that took a step back on their payday last offseason or two off seasons ago to buy in, they're not going to be as patient anymore. They're going to want that money. And to be fair, they deserved it. They made one or two Super Bowls at this point. So I think they have a more difficult path than Tampa Bay does. But at the end of the day, I think Kansas City still has to be the early favorite next year for the AFC at least. So I wouldn't be overly concerned if I'm the Chiefs.
Yeah, and it'll be a very interesting offseason. And it already has been.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most dominant defensive players in the past decade, J.J. Watt, was not traded, was released straight from the Texans. And he did ask for, you know, he wanted to leave the team, and I think the Texans granted it as sort of a peace offering. It's, I mean, from an organizational standpoint, obviously you want assets for a generational talent like him, despite his injury record. But, oh boy, you got a big, very important piece on the market. And there are a lot of teams who could use him and a lot of teams who want him. And it is going to be a very interesting offseason.
No, nobody gets worse by adding J.J. Watt.
It will be interesting. I think the front runners so far are the Packers. You know, that idea of having a better defensive edge rush, you know, complementing the Aaron Rodgers-led offense is a great addition. Your Pittsburgh Steelers, 100%, because you got the two other Watt brothers. I mean, there's synergy right there. It's basically like the NFL version of LeVar Ball forcing all his kids to play on one team, except I'm assuming Mr. Watt is not a control freak like Mr. Ball.
No, and I think also everybody wants this one, really.
100%. I don't think there's anyone in the world that's like, oh, three brothers who so close since birth are now on the same team. Like, that's pretty cool.
There might be some people in Baltimore who are a little skeptical.
That's fine. You know what? Other than our good friend Ryan from Box Office Kiwis, I don't really care about Baltimore fans. Sorry.
I don't.
It's okay. Yeah, I know you definitely don't.
Those are probably the two front runners. We'll get to some of the other teams maybe in a sec here. But, you know, Green Bay, like you said, they got not necessarily exposed, but they could very clearly have used someone like Watt in the playoffs. Just a defensive playmaker, a guy that's not just going to, you know, do the right thing, but he's going to do the right thing and turn it into something beneficial for your team. You know, the health, like you said, is an issue, and that might have been why teams were going to be a little hesitant on trading for him and as to why he was released. The Packers instantly jumped to a top five defense, at least on paper, with him there. But you talk about Pittsburgh, man. Pittsburgh, the thing with Pittsburgh is it's more difficult to bring him in. You have to work around some cap. Ben Roethlisberger, obviously, it would have to take a large salary hit. Juju and Connor would both most likely not be coming back at that point, especially James Connor. I honestly don't think Connor's coming back regardless, but it's possible. And that's the thing is, like, when there's a player that good, that generationally talented, you have to kind of do what you have to do to get him. It was almost the idea of when James Harden was available, you know, a few months ago in the NBA. It was just the Nets just kind of had to do what they had to do to bring in somebody that talented on their team that was going to bring them success. And it's that same idea. So with Pittsburgh is you're going to have to lose some pieces, but if you have the potential for your defense to be the two Watt brothers, Bud Dupree and Devin Bush,
scary.
You don't need anything else. They're touching the quarterback every play.
I think one other team that I have to, of course, mention is my Philadelphia Eagles. Lane Johnson was tweeting about how he'd love JJ Watt in Philly. I would also love that. Unfortunately, Robbie, the Eagles have decided to have burnt salary cap in the past few years and now are looking at we don't have any real money to spend. This has been a recurring problem for the past few years.
That is unfortunate when you try and spend money on the guys that won you a Super Bowl and then they either get hurt or don't perform quite as well. But
so let's take my anger and segue it to even more anger. Carson Wentz, we had talked about him last week. Right after we finished, hey, he's on the trading block, and he's apparently will get traded immediately. You got the Colts, you got the Bears interested. Wow, that moved fast. And as of Valentine's Day today, he's still there, which I don't know how I feel about that. I feel lost, and it's going to be a very interesting probably few months because I imagine teams aren't going to really jump at the idea of taking on Carson Wentz. I'm still holding out hope the Texans want him, and I think that's a win-win for just a win for the Eagles.
That's a dream right there if you can turn Wentz into Watson. You know, Watson also hasn't been moved yet. They've, like we said, been adamant about not moving him. But, you know, we'll see if the release of J.J. Watt kind of loosens the grip, the, you know, the death grip on his neck right now. But as for Wentz, I honestly might like have even believed that that statement of we're going to trade Carson Wentz was just kind of a distraction to get over the kind of mess that is the Eagles offseason right now. Not that they've done anything particularly wrong yet, but like it's such a large, daunting offseason you have coming up that you kind of need to take some pressure off. You know, I mentioned right before we got on here that one offseason where the Eagles signed Tim Tebow to like the practice squad for the offseason and they cut him before the season started. And when my brothers and I were thinking back on it, we were like, yeah, I think they just kind of did that to take away the storylines of who was going to be the starting quarterback that year. And you know, maybe it's not the same reasoning for doing these things, but saying something like Carson Wentz is going to be traded takes a little bit of pressure off of you need to decide who your starting quarterback is right now. You're not going to get a first-round pick for Carson Wentz. I'm going to tell you that right now. He's on way too large of a contract to not be playing at the level he should be. But if you can get a second or third pick, which I think is realistically possible, especially for a team that just kind of needs a good quarterback, or at least a solid quarterback. But it's going to take a minute. You know, teams are going to be hesitant. They want to see where Wentz is at. Wentz got sacked so many times this season. You got to see if he's healthy. And then you got to see how he's looking in some drills. It's going to be a slow off season for the Eagles.
Yeah. In addition to that, there's a lot of buzz about Zach Ertz potentially being traded or cut this off season, which very disappointing because 3 years ago, I would have screamed to the heavens that he was honestly like the best tight end in the league when they won the Super Bowl. And here we're now where he had a very disappointing regression, and whether it's through injuries or just play calling, you can be the judge of that, but statistically not deserving of a big, you know, wide receiver type contract, especially with his production this year. I will miss him though if he does go.
You got Dallas Goedert though, which is the big thing, probably the best backup tight end in all of football. I mean, this dude stepped up in a big way when Ertz went down this season, putting up 50 yards, touchdowns, multiple games in a row. You hate to move on from a guy like Zach Ertz because he meant so much to your franchise. He was such a great person to just have on your team, just a good guy. But at the end of the day, if you have a tight end better, yet like you said, you can't spend the big bucks just to keep the nice guy.
100%. So anything else for off season?
Not a whole lot. The Pouncey brothers officially retired. Right. Thought that was kind of nice. Trevor Lawrence, pretty much the last thing here. He did have his pro day. But he does have a surgery coming up. It's to repair a damaged labrum in his non-throwing arm. So not super major, but something to note before the draft here. Potential number one overall pick. Wanted to throw that out there. But he did look good. The scouts liked what they saw in the pro day. So looking good for Lawrence, as we know, more than likely going to be on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think that's it for the NFL. Like we said, offseason pretty much just getting underway as the Super Bowl has concluded. A offseason well underway would be the MLB. Lots of news, obviously, like we've said. Kansas City making moves now. They land all-star outfielder Andrew Benintendi in a three-team deal that also included the Mets and the team they landed him from, the Red Sox. Some minor league and some young guys traded between the Mets and the Red Sox, but obviously the big one being Benintendi. You know, the Royals are a solid team, but Benintendi can be a difference maker. What do you like about this move?
I don't, because I don't think the Royals are fully ready to begin competing again. I don't mind it because you're getting actual value. Like, people are going to come to your games because of a guy like him. There's star power there. And it's tough because in baseball, you really have to commit to either going at a championship or rebuilding. The Royals did it a few years ago. They went to the World Series and won, went to the World Series and lost. Great, great things. But now they've entered this rebuild mode, kind of like the Tigers of a few years ago when they had Scherzer and Verlander. It was kind of the same thing with the Pirates. The Pirates obviously weren't as competitive, but they had a lot of talents. Garrett Cole and just the sheer amount of firepower they had that's on different teams now was incredible. Yeah. But what I'm getting at here is the Royals, I think, are taking the step in the direction where, okay, we're going to start competing again. I think they're doing a little bit more of a casual rebuild where, okay, we're going to be half competitive every year. So as long as they're increasing assets, you know, farm system prospects, I think that's all good. The Red Sox, though, I think he gave away, in my opinion, a solid asset. Not like a Mookie Betts type asset, but yeah, I don't really love it for the Red Sox. And who's the third? Is the Yankees?
It was the Mets, and
oh.
I think they were just kind of in there to be the third team in the deal type situation.
It's like the Cavs in basketball. Just like, I need to be in this news. Yeah,
let me get that extra Jared Allen. What you talking about?
Take a Jared Allen from you.
Yeah, I guess the Red Sox replaced Benintendi by signing Marwin Gonzalez. Not necessarily a household name, but he's a utility guy. He can play pretty much any infield or outfield position. But yeah, no, for a team that needs to do better than at the poor season they had last year, not the right direction, not the right move so far. Okay, so we got Boston. I don't love giving Boston any praise, so we're just gonna slide past them. Move on here. One of our Phillies former pitchers has actually rejoined his old club. That would be Jake Arrieta signing a one-year deal with the Chicago Cubs. And if you remember, just a few years ago, Arrieta actually won his Cy Young with the Chicago Cubs in what was probably the greatest second half of a baseball season of all time, from a pitcher at least. Not necessarily a huge move. We've talked about the Cubs kind of being in more of a rebuild mode at this point, and Arrieta well past his prime, but kind of a nice thing to see, you know, go to the team where you had your most success.
Yeah, get him off my team. 100%. Yeah. Get him out of here. I like Arrieta. I mean, very disappointing on the Phillies, but you know, I'm glad he's back in Chicago. Fan favorite.
We like having him, but at the end of the day, go pitch for another team.
I like the idea of him. I didn't like having him.
I kind of agree with that, because I heard so much praise of Jake Arrieta when he was a Cub that I was like, you know, I guess I got to embrace it. And it wasn't worth embracing.
It's like a girlfriend on Valentine's Day. I like the idea of it, but also I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah, it's usually more scary when it's actually right there in front of you.
But the Instagram posts, it's so easy.
So easy. Oh, man. Nice little Valentine reunion for Arrieta and the Cubs there. We talked about the Tigers just a minute ago. They making moves. Nomar Mazara, former Ranger, has now signed with Detroit. Said he's looking for a fresh start, and Detroit's a pretty good place for that. You know, there's a couple steps into the rebuild process now. Mazara, a younger guy, looking to just kind of see where he belongs in the MLB. So I think there's a good spot for him. He can maybe hit in a better part of a batting order, help him out a little bit. Solid defensively, from what I understand. And I think it's a good move for him in his career.
Agreed.
Moving on, the Dodgers. We've talked about the big moves they've made. Obviously, coming off the World Series, you also want to keep some of the pieces you had. They are successful in that regard. Justin Turner, the great third baseman, signed, and he's staying for 2 more years with LA. Obviously, going to be the front runners to win the World Series again. Good signing. A very good player. Very, very big team guy. You know, he got removed from the last game of the World Series because he got COVID, but still an important contributor to this team.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the Dodgers' finances, though, at the end of this year, because I imagine they're just burning money at this point. But then again, they're winning, and they're definitely one of the most lucrative baseball teams, and obviously in the MLB. So, you know, good signing, obviously keeping your team together. You're adding pieces. So, Dodgers, man, it's going to be scary.
Yeah, they're horrifying. And unless you're an LA Dodgers fan, you probably hate it.
You probably hate everything.
Exactly. It's going to be a rough year for most baseball fans. Couple other signings here. The most recent big name signing, I guess, at this point would be that the Mariners landed James Paxton, who's on the Yankees last year. So solid pitcher, good guy to bring into the rotation. The Mariners, I don't know how close they are to really competing, to be completely honest, but when you bring in a good pitcher, it's always putting the right foot in front of you. So I like that signing. And then the only other thing I want to bring up, just because I've met this man before, and he's a gentleman, but Billy Hamilton, the Sonic speedster, back into the minors, unfortunately, with Cleveland. Man, it's always been said, if Billy Hamilton could hit 250, he'd be the best player in baseball.
Well, thanks for taking a generational talent and relegating him to the minor league, Robbie.
My bad.
I blame you, solely you. And not Billy Hamilton the slightest.
I see him in the MLB playoffs. Next I hear he's in the minors. What can I say? I got that bad juju.
I wonder if there's like a stat, like before photo with Robbie Rosenfeld, after photo with Robbie Rosenfeld.
The hair is gray, the beard is shaggy.
His life has fallen apart after this one photo with someone he met. Oh, I love that. Sabermetrics are great.
at least I would know that I had a large impact on somebody, and that would make me feel at least.
But it's so negative. You ruined his life. That's awful.
I think his batting average ruined his life. But
that's,
we will,
you're
let
probably
that
not wrong.
We will let his average continue to define his status. Either way, I just wanted to shout him out. That's pretty much what we got.
Shitty shout out.
It's a good shout out. We got to bring up the names.
Of course. All right.
That's it for the MLB, though, for now. Again, when the big news happens, we will have it for the free agent period. Moving down into the NBA, we started the MLB with the trade. We're going to start the NBA with a trade as well, and that was the New York Knicks reunited Tom Thibodeau and Derrick Rose. There had been rumor that Derrick Rose was going to get traded to more of a contending team than the 5 or 6 win Detroit Pistons. And he, in fact, was reuniting not just with Thibodeau, but also Taj Gibson's on that team now. A couple of the guys from those great Derrick Rose teams. And Rose has looked good in his first few games with the Knicks, averaging somewhere along the lines of 20 points, 4 assists, and a steal. Always solid. In only about 20 minutes, which is the big one. Coming off the bench so far. But the real thing is, you know, the Knicks, the question all year is going to be, can they keep it up and make the playoffs? Is Derrick Rose enough of a piece to get them in the East?
You know, every gut instinct is telling me no, but the Knicks have been red hot this year, at least compared to what we expected them to be. Right now, they're ranked 7th in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. And it's interesting because I imagine they'll be usurped by like the Heat, maybe the Raptors as well. Like right now, they're just under 500. They're 7th in the East. I see a very likely scenario, though, where they make that like playing game, you know, 7-10. And what they do from there, maybe they win their play-in series or game and then get swept, or like maybe 5-game loss to like the Sixers, the Bucks, the Nets. I think the Knicks are finally on the upswing, dare I say. Derrick Rose is a good piece as veteran leadership and adds a lot of pizzazz and like kind of flair and, you know, guts and that tenacity that they probably need, because unfortunately they've sucked for so many years.
Yes.
I would also like to say, though, I am sick and tired of social media posting stuff about Obi Toppin. I know I was high on this guy earlier, but stop posting his dunk. Like I don't care. He's averaging 4 points a game. That's disappointing, because I was like, this guy could be a real good player, and here he is. Oh, he dunks the ball. I'm like, yeah, that's one of his two makes of the night. Like, cool, whatever.
Almost like the salty Iowa fan could have been right.
Tyrese Halliburton.
All right, whatever. Going back to the Knicks with Derrick Rose, though, you mentioned that they had such struggles to bring in a good culture for so long. Someone like Derrick Rose maybe doesn't completely change the culture, but if you're able to get a guy like Rose, maybe someone like a step or two above his skill level is like, maybe I will go join the Knicks. And then a team with Rose, Randall, and a player that's around their skill level, they're still not competing, but they're much better off than the 8th to 10th pick in the NBA draft, which is where they seem to be just about every year. I think it's very possible they get to the playoffs. I think it's very, you know, it's realistic that they're going to be in the top 10, that play-in scenario. But, you know, it's just Derrick Rose. We do have to remember that. He's not going to win you a playoff series, especially because if they make it, they're going to be a bottom seed. They're going to be playing Philly or Milwaukee or Brooklyn. And they can't handle that type of skill. But this is the best Knicks team we've seen in a little while, at least since that Melo team that made the playoffs. So it's exciting. It's nice to see a reinvigorated Derrick Rose too, which I'm sure all NBA fans love.
Absolutely.
More on the Knicks. They will, however, you know, the acquisition of Derrick Rose, they will be without Mitch Robinson for 4 to 6 weeks, fractured his hand. Nerlens Noel has stepped into the starting lineup. We expect to see Taj Gibson getting some more minutes and probably still heavy run for Julius Randle. Just to reiterate, they did trade Dennis Smith Jr. and a second round pick for Derrick Rose. That's what the Pistons received in the trade. Forgot to mention that. But the impact of going back to Robinson, the impact of that, is it going to change too much? Because to me, Nerlens Noel just feels like a slightly less athletic version of Mitch Robinson.
Yeah, I would basically agree with that. Nerlens Noel, though, very good defensive player, though. I mean, he's always the one who's locking down the paint. He can't do a whole lot offensively. He's not like, if you took Rashawn Holmes and merged him with Nerlens Noel, you'd basically have Joel Embiid, except just like a super skinny version of him. So
that's a who he played for episode right there.
Yeah, like those two guys being like, you know, backups to Embiid when they were on the Sixers. Like it was always like yin and yang versus Embiid being like the entire package. I digress though. So Nerlens Noel will be serviceable, but Mitch Robinson is, I feel bad saying the future, because that's putting a lot of like praise on him. He's a good player, great to have, but like he will be better than Nerlens Noel, at least in terms of longevity, when he hits his peak and hits his best years. So for now though, it'll be okay. It's the Knicks. It's fine.
They may lose a couple games, but again, like you say, it's the Knicks. That's expected. It's par for the course. Oh, moving on from New York here. There's a couple other teams to mention. I'm not going to drown you with Miami Heat talk this week. They are, as I stated, interested in making moves. One player that's come up is Nemanja Bjelica of the Kings. The only reason I bring this up is because it's essentially what they need, and that's a three-point shooting big man. I just wanted to quickly get your thoughts on if that would be enough to get the Heat kind of over this hump, this slump they've been in.
Well, it's funny because the Sixers were also eyeing him up. So, but he also flaked on us earlier, so I really don't want him on my team.
That's right.
It's hard to say because I think it's more of a meshing thing right now for the Heat. Like, I think you have your pieces. I think you are missing a bit more role players like you had last year. It's not like an end-all solution, but it doesn't hurt. Like, I don't think adding him would make the Heat suck.
Yeah, I think the idea would be to, because I think the essential trade that I saw put in place would be the Heat just taking him on for either cash or like a second-round draft pick, because the Heat have a $7.6 million cap hold that they can kind of absorb his contract into. So if that's the case, I'm fine with it. What I don't like would be trading him for Kelly Olynyk, because there's no point to that. They're essentially the same player. But having two of those players, that's not bad. Then you can put Kelly on the bench, and he can really be the backup center instead of having to play Precious, who is good, but at times a bit undersized and hasn't quite garnered the skill to play an undersized center that Bam has. I like it, but like you say, I don't know if it makes us go back to the finals right away. That's it. That's all I wanted to talk about for the Heat, though. 5-3 since Jimmy's return. Just got trounced by the Jazz last night. The Jazz, geez, red hot. Just 5 losses so far. The best record in the NBA. And I bring them up because I want to ask you a question here, Sir Sixers fan. Who do you think the coach of the year is so far? Would that be your Doc Rivers or the Jazz Quinn Snyder?
I'm glad you asked. I have to see how much bias I can remove in this conversation. man, I would have to say the Jazz, just because Brett Brown last year, like, or the past few years, was kind of seemed to be the root cause of all the Sixers' failures. Not to say he was, but like a lot of people were like, he's not the right coach. So you bring in Doc Rivers, who had a great year with the Clippers last year until the playoff collapse, and he's obviously doing well with these new pieces they have, and that's great. Like, he's doing a great job, and you know, our boy is phenomenal. I love having him. I think it's very interesting though that Quinn Snyder has taken this Jazz team, who last year like made the playoffs and were good, but basically with what I would say the same core, has taken them to another level. I don't know if it was like, you know, if it's just lucky or whatever, but Quinn Snyder, I think right now, is the front runner for the candidate for coach of the year. And as long as the Jazz don't choke, which, hey, I'm not saying they will. No, I don't think they will. They'll obviously make the playoffs. I don't think they're going to finish with like 10 losses. They'll have probably more than that, but Quinn Snyder is my coach of the year pick right now.
Yeah, as tough as it is to, I actually agree with you. Quinn
Snyder. As tough
Snyder,
as it is, you cocky.
I'm kidding. I love you.
Me too.
No, I agree with you. It's Quinn Snyder. And really, it comes down to, you look at the Sixers roster, and it's kind of like, yeah, they should be really good at basketball. You look at the Jazz roster, and then you're like, yeah, they should probably be like the 5 or 6 seed in the Western Conference. But lo and behold, they are the number one seed in the NBA. That, like you say, almost the exact same roster as last year, but you have a reinvigorated Mike Conley. You have a transcending Donovan Mitchell. You have a sixth man of the year front runner, Jordan Clarkson. And, oh, don't forget, probably the most scrutinized center in basketball right now, Rudy Gobert, playing some of his best defensive basketball as of late. This team is not something you can just brush off as a top seed in the playoffs. If they end up being the one seed and an eight seed, like say the Mavericks come in as the eight seed and think that they can just kind of upset this team because it's not the Lakers, it's not the Clippers. No, you have to take this Jazz team just as seriously at this point. You know, it's obviously going to take the rest of the season to prove that they belong in the top tier of teams, but Denver got there last year, and now we consider them to be one of the top tier teams in the West. I think this is Utah making that, taking that step. And I think Quinn Snyder is the main reason for that, because the roster hasn't changed, but they're winning more games. They're playing better defense. They're shooting a higher percentage. It's got to be something to do with the guy on the bench. But one more guy I want to kind of throw out a name here. With how well the Spurs have been playing with this unimpressive roster they have, could Pop potentially be a dark horse for Coach of the Year?
No, because at the end of the day, it's like LeBron the MVP. He may be the deserving MVP, but you usually give it to the person who is talked about the most. And Coach of the Year is no exception for it. You could probably make a case that Greg Popovich, every year he was with the Spurs, could have been Coach of the Year. But it's sort of the team that really exceeds expectations. Kind of went, like, not the Jazz were our bottom tier team last year, made the playoffs, but the jump has been just something out of the ordinary. Pop's like definitely in the conversation, though. He always is a great coach, but just something to consider.
Just a fun name to throw out there. But yeah, no, the clear front runners right now would be Doc and Snyder. And I don't want any of this to diminish how great of a job Doc Rivers has done completely changing the Sixers' compassion and demeanor when playing. So good on both of them. Gonna move on to something. Okay, so I got home from work one day and I was just like, I'm just gonna watch some basketball, see whatever's on. And a nationally televised game between the Dallas Mavericks and Atlanta Hawks came on. And I was like, all right, I hate both these teams. They don't play defense, but I'll watch. This is supposed to be good basketball. And it really wasn't. First of all, both teams were under 500. Neither team had more than 11 wins. And it was very sloppy. It was a lot of turnovers. There was really no defense. It was just kind of, you missed shots every once in a while. Dallas specifically was like, I just kept looking at individual players, and the reason everybody was on the court was either because they could make a shot or they were Josh Richardson. Like, you can just play defense. Like, that was it. Or Dorian Finney-Smith. They have two guys that play perimeter defense. And then Atlanta blowing a lead. Like, they couldn't hold back this team that does one thing. And yeah, that one thing is score the basketball, but you had an advantage. I don't really know what happened. Trae Young, that was the game he got, fined, ended up getting fined for arguing foul calls. And the way it ended, I mean, it was Danilo Gallinari was 1 of 6 that game, and he shoots like a little fall away corner of the free throw line jump shot that clanks off the side of the rim and goes out. It was a poorly drawn play. It was like a disappointing end to what, like, on paper was a close game, but it was honestly not fun. And I just, my point being, it's going to become like, these are two teams that are going to be competing for the bottom seeds in the playoffs, and those teams can always be enticing, especially in a year where, say, like a Utah Jazz, that maybe they do fall off a little bit but still get a top seed, could be beaten. These two teams are going to get swept in the playoffs because they can't play a lick of defense. They can't stop anyone. I mean, say Dallas has to face the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. Who's guarding LeBron?
Luka.
Okay, LeBron's going to average 40 a night.
I didn't say it was a good defensive matchup. I just said what I think will happen. But you're not wrong. Like, the Mavericks, like, last year, I don't know if we gave him a pass because Luka was so, it was his second year. They were a historically great offensive team. And, I mean, defensively, it was pretty bad. But, like, they would win games. They were exciting to watch. I think Seth Curry was actually more of a asset to that team than people lead on. So I'm intrigued because they have regressed. Luka isn't like the boy wonder we thought he was last year. I mean, he's still a great player, but it's a little interesting. I mean, the Hawks, though, are probably going to make the playoffs. I think the Hawks are still too new, but I mean, the Hawks have never been good at defense, and they're going to be the team that's going to have to score just a million points, and you know, maybe they can do that.
We'll see. The issue with them really becomes if they face either a team like the Sixers that can just shut down most of their offensive weapons, or a team like the Nets that can just straight up outscore them. But either way, I'm a little worried about those two teams, and less worried and more just excited about how hopefully Atlanta falls apart. But either way, they just, you know, defense has got to be the thing they need to focus on the most. We know Dallas spent their offseason trying to bring in defensive pieces, but it hasn't seemed to work so far. Either way, they got to pick it up. Luka, though, coming off a career high 46 against the Pelicans. Shout out to him. One more fun little thing to talk about in the NBA really quick, and that is that the Lakers were issued a flopping warning for one of the games this past week, LeBron and Kuzma in particular. If you've seen the videos, you know, people commenting, wow, one of the hardest hits LeBron's ever taken. He just kind of falls to the ground on his own. I mean, this is the thing that, like, people say something like the old school players never flopped, and they're wrong, but not like this. They didn't do this. They didn't just fall to the ground to try and do like get the ref's attention. Like, man, you're the best player on the planet. Like suck up your pride.
No, I agree with that. Like, but also like 80s and 90s NBA, it was like, oh, they got fouled. Maybe they over dramatized. Like, they still definitely made contact, but you know, maybe they just played it out of it. Like, this is like phantom call type stuff. And it's annoying. And that's kind of, you know, people who are Jordan stans, I mean, not necessarily myself, but that's something they bring up where it's like, yeah, LeBron obviously is a phenomenal player, can score on will, this, but like, he's soft. At least they bring up like flopping and all of that. And I'm not insinuating LeBron is soft. Like, LeBron, in terms of that man's dedication to whatever team he's been on, like, one of the most tremendous hard workers and tough players we've ever seen. But yeah, it's a tough look. It always has, always will be. And yeah, but also he's getting older and he kind of needs that time to rest.
Yeah, he's gotta lay down for a second. Hold up, guys. It's gotta take a breath. All right, that's what we got for the NBA season, well underway, of course. College basketball season's also started up. Not a whole lot of storylines necessarily, but first we wanted to start out by giving a Big Ten shout out because they have not just one, two, or three, they have seven teams currently ranked in the top 25. That doesn't happen all of the time. It's going to go down the list here quickly. Michigan is 3, Ohio State 4, Illinois 6, Iowa 15, Wisconsin 21, although Michigan just beat them, Purdue 24, and Rutgers 25. Just a general shout out to the Big Ten. And now in particular, Michigan, like I said, just beat the 21st seed Wisconsin. They have one loss overall, one loss in the Big Ten, third seed in the nation. We were talking about the sky being the limit for Iowa. Could Michigan have been the gold team we should have been talking about all year, though?
Never. We never will abandon our boy Luka. Regards the guys till the end.
Amen.
But it's like we talked about many times. It's surprising because usually Michigan is that team who is – they're always good, but they sort of at like the end of the year really come alive and sort of are that team. Like, everyone knows about it, obviously, but they make a splash because they're underrated. So I guess I shouldn't be surprised because we always should underestimate them because that gets them, you know, far in the tournament. But to me, it's a bit intriguing that, you know, only having one loss and it being to an opponent who is one of the toughest, like, in the Big Ten, like, that to me, it's incredible how they're doing this year, and you know, good on them. I guess going off that though, we are a month away from March Madness, which feels so weird to say because I was watching the prelims almost, you know, a year ago, you know, 11 months ago. Oh boy. All right. So for everyone who doesn't know, it's all in the state of Indiana. Right. Yeah. It's where the Colts play. And there's a bunch of facilities that are going to take up. The schedule has been truncated a bit. They're having, instead of Thursday, Friday, it's, I think, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And they're playing, their games are a lot more close to each other. It'll be very interesting. Basically, the general gist of all this stuff is lots of basketball very quickly. You're going to get your just that euphoria that endorphin rush that you've been just desperately looking for now that football season's over.
Get your screens ready, your iPads, your computers, your phones, your TVs. Get them all out. You'll have four or five games at once. It's going to be prime basketball time.
Obviously, the tournaments haven't started for the different conferences yet, but there are a lot of front runners for the one seeds in each of the four sectors. I mean, they're all in the same spot, so it's irrelevant this year, but like, I care about the different sides of the bracket.
Oh yeah.
I feel like it would be very tough to exclude Gonzaga and Baylor in this conversation as they are the two best teams in the nation for a reason.
Yes. Yes.
And even if for some unknown reason Gonzaga does not win their conference, I still think they'd be a one seed. Granted, they get a lot of flack for it, understandably, but I think they'll be okay. Baylor, yeah. Kind of the same way. These last two seeds, though, what are some thoughts? Lay them on me.
There's a lot of teams in this conversation. Really quick on Baylor and Gonzaga, though, I think they've also gotten to the point where they have a game leeway. Like, if they both drop a game, I think they're fine.
Yeah.
They're pretty much locked at this point. So they're the top two seeds. The third number one seed at this point in time has to be the Michigan Wolverines. Hunter Dickerson playing his best basketball, Isaiah Livers, Eli Brooks, Franz Wagner shooting the lights out. They're playing an excellent brand of basketball. But the caveat on Michigan is it's only Michigan if they win the Big Ten. It's only Ohio State if they win the Big Ten. It's only Illinois if they win the Big Ten. Iowa has gotten to the point where they're not going to be a one seed at this point. They've lost six games.
Pain.
But Michigan, the one loss, like I said, if they win the Big Ten outright, they're going to be a one seed. If they make it to the Big Ten championship and lose to, say, like an Ohio State or an Illinois, I think they still have a good chance of being a one seed because of the high-profile name that they are. So I mentioned Ohio State, I mentioned Illinois, but those guys also, it's really like you got to win the Big Ten or do very well in the Big Ten. The not Big Ten teams in this discussion would be Villanova and Virginia. Virginia, we've talked about, they you know, had the year where they lost in the first round to a 16 seed and then come back and win the national championship. That's actually the last national championship we were able to have. They're going to be a team that plays well. Sam Hauser's an absolute baller on the low block. I think they're the 6 or 7 seed right now, excuse me. But Villanova, we know what they're about. Jay Wright, one of the best coaches in college basketball. Colin Gillespie, a potential front runner for the player of the year and definitely for the best point guard in college. Those are the two names that really strike me as going to be the fourth one seed. I will say this, the only way we see two Big Ten teams at the final two one seeds is if Michigan essentially doesn't lose a game for the rest of the year until they lose to Ohio State or Illinois in the Big Ten championship.
Yeah, I think the only other, like, Illinois is kind of the other dark horse, but that sort of depends on what Michigan, Ohio State do. The one that's maybe a little bit interesting is Texas Tech. I'm not saying they're deserving of a one seed, but like, maybe they make a push. I can see them being a two seed, and I think they will be, but that's an intriguing team to look at.
No, they play good basketball. They're hard. They're hard fighters. If I'm not mistaken, that's Mac McClug.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolute stud. Really fun to watch attack the rim. They're going to make a push. They've won some big games recently. They lost a couple tough ones, but, you know, it happens. It's par for the course. But they're not like Iowa where they've dropped a lot of games in a row or they've dropped some games to some rough teams to lose games to. I'm talking a little ill of Iowa, though. They are coming off a 30-point win against Michigan State. That always feels good. But, yeah, those. If I were to pick four right now, I'd say Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan, Villanova.
Then I'll have to be a little bit contradictory. I'd say Gonzaga, Baylor, UMich, and, of course, Virginia. So we will see. It's going to come down to – besides for Baylor and Gonzaga, it's going to come down to who wins the different conferences and who ends up with, obviously, a really superior record. But it's getting exciting. We'll finally have March Madness back, which is the reason why COVID happened, clearly. It's just March Madness didn't happen. There you go.
No, we were delayed a year. This is hopefully going to be some of the most exciting basketball we get now.
Yeah.
Oh, a little bit more for college basketball. Valparaiso has dropped the name Crusaders, the name, the logo, and their mascot. Their reasoning being association with hate groups. I think despite that reasoning, it was a good decision. But, you know, I guess at least if they got to the good end decision, it doesn't necessarily matter how you got there. I don't know.
Yeah, I would tend to believe that a better response to that decision would be maybe because Crusaders were known to like pillage and take people's land, but they were, you know, you got swept under the rug a little bit. But yeah, I, you know, good on them. Maybe not the best of reason, but hey, if Crusaders is part of hate groups, I would definitely get rid of the moniker, regardless of historical implications. So
who calls them anything but Valpo anyway?
That's true. I didn't even know they were Crusaders, to be honest.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, so that's it for the news today. Hope y'all enjoyed that segment. The top stories, of course, Super Bowl, the big free agent news in MLB, Derrick Rose trades, and the ridiculous season that has been college basketball so far. On the note that Alex mentioned at the top of the show that we have joined partnered with a sports betting app, we are going to give some sports betting predictions of our own. So, Alex, you want to take it away here?
Okay. So, as the in-house degenerate here, and as a kid who's obsessed with statistics, I got a few things for you. A lot of them, you know, with NFL being done, basketball changes day to day with games, you know, people being out, load management, all that. But the one thing that does not change, Robbie, is over a long period of time. And that implies regular season awards, division winners, NBA finals, all that. That's when it really matters. So I got to ask you, yay or nay, are you buying into Tyrese Haliburton being the rookie of the year?
No. Like, I actually do think he could very well be the most skilled rookie so far. The thing is, if Tyrese Haliburton is going to win it, LaMelo Ball is actually going to win it. They're too similar, and the name LaMelo Ball is too fun of a name to throw out for that award. With Wiseman being out and having not played his best basketball, with Edwards shooting under 40% from the field, you know, that the award is wide open. But if it's going to be a point guard on a team that probably doesn't make the playoffs, I feel like it would have to be LaMelo Ball at that point. And again, though, I would love Tyrese Haliburton because he has, in my opinion, been the most impressive rookie so far.
Yeah, I guess right now LaMelo Ball is the favorite at minus 500. Makes sense. I mean, the Hornets are actually like seem to be decent this year. Obviously, I don't think they're going to win the championship, but Tyrese Haliburton, though, is in second, plus 600. Not too shabby. And third is Anthony Edwards, plus 1,200. Definitely putting up good stats, just horrible shooting, as we've alluded to many a times.
Andrew Wiggins, man.
Andrew Wiggins. Okay. This one's interesting. Are you buying into the idea that Joel Embiid at plus 400 is like, he's going to be the MVP?
If he keeps playing like this, absolutely. Joel Embiid is the best center on the best team in the Eastern Conference. I think the fourth best team in the NBA right now. The big competitor is not Nikola Jokic, it's LeBron James, because the Lakers are going to finish as a top two seed. LeBron James is going to average LeBron James numbers and come with the just aggressiveness of not having won it last year when he believes he should have. Joe's the front runner, though. The Sixers are playing some of the best basketball I've seen since the process started. Actually, the best basketball since I've seen since the process started. And that's a good thing, because Joe has taken over the role as the true leader on this team. It's no longer, is it going to be Ben, is it going to be Joe? It's Joe. Joe's the best player on that team, and it's not close. The big thing against Jokic is the fact that the Nuggets haven't found a lot of consistent success yet. They're slowly building up a little bit more, but at the end of the day, we've seen a guy average a triple-double and barely make the playoffs and then lose in the first round. To be honest, it's the role players are kind of losing this for Jokic right now, because Jokic is playing his best basketball, but Murray and Harris and Barton, they haven't been doing it much for this team this year. The loss of Jeremy Grant clearly weighing on them as well. If you're going to make money on betting for Joel Embiid, I would bet for Joel Embiid.
I think that is the best value. He is second right now. LeBron is the favorite at plus 200. But like I had said before, betting on LeBron is a tricky situation. I'm not saying like he's not deserving of it, but you know what I'm talking about. It's really about that flair. It's about like who really catches the eye, who's the new and upcoming person who is like, wow, they're incredible this year. Exactly. I would tend to agree that Luka and Giannis are sort of out of the conversation, at least unless they do something incredible. Unless
the Bucks pass the Sixers definitively.
Yeah, Jokic if their team is having more success, I think you could make a legitimate, strong argument that he is deserving. But unfortunately, they are not. Okay. Depoy.
Ooh, love this.
I'm not really feeling right now. Gobert is the front runner at minus 121.
Of course.
Miles Turner is plus 250. I'm not feeling that either. I'm kind of feeling. I'm tempted to either reset Giannis or Anthony Davis. That's kind of tempting.
Well, so all of those names are definitely going to have the potential. And I want to put yesterday's performance out of our mind when I mention this. I'm curious, what are the odds for Ben Simmons?
Plus 1,000.
I think there's a very real world that Ben Simmons is Defensive Player of the Year. It's tough to say quote me on that. But, like, outside of the unfortunate performance he had against Devin Booker, Ben Simmons has locked up essentially everybody he's played. He's constantly guarding either the best guard or the best forward on the other team. And he's done a very impressive job so far. His staple is defense. Legitimately, though, man, I don't think it's either of those front two guys. I think, you know, because he's not going to be an MVP candidate, Giannis could very well just win another Defensive Player of the Year. Or actually, has he won more than one yet?
No, but last year was when he won MVP and Depoy, which is like the first in a while. But yeah, I'm not like Rudy Gobert is obviously a name you always throw in there because that is what he is obviously best at. But I don't know. I'm not sold on either of the top two. Ben Simmons, while I agree, can lock up basically 1 through 5. The problem is, I guarantee he'll be a all NBA defensive player selection, especially for the guards. But as a overall one, nah, I think you're going to have to give it to a big man, unfortunately. And I think I'm really feeling AD, not because AD's been having like an incredible, like actually AD or Giannis, because Giannis, you know, a freak of nature, of course.
My money's on those two guys. Like, I think Gobert, like, if you're thinking about it right now, how well off they're doing, it's tough to bet against him. But yeah, I mean, I don't think Rudy Gobert has ever been the best defensive player in basketball.
All right, I got three more for you. We're not going to talk about the championship winner because a lot can happen, but we're going to talk about the conference winners.
I like that.
Okay. Eastern Conference. Right now, my Sixers are in third for the favorite. They're plus 550. The Nets are the favorite at plus 162. I think if the Sixers and Nets square off, I think the Sixers can win that. But
I think the Sixers could embarrass them.
It's tough because Kevin Durant is the X factor there. Like, Ben Simmons could cover James Harden or Kyrie Irving. I truly believe that. The problem comes down to, like, could Seth Curry or could Danny Green do that? And then could you have Ben Simmons guard Kevin Durant? And it'll be interesting. It depends, honestly, how the seeding is going to go, because I feel like the Nets could have a really easy schedule to get to the conference finals or a very tough matchup schedule. So,
yeah, I'm going to come out with a bold claim, though, for our listeners here. Do not bet on the Brooklyn Nets to win the East. This may not be too bold. In fact, the bold part of this is do not bet on the Brooklyn Nets to make the conference finals. I know that is a large statement to make, but you are sorely forgetting about an angry Giannis. You are completely discounting a Boston team that's been to the conference finals two of the last 3 years. And then you absolutely cannot count out potential comebacks for Miami or Toronto. At this point in time, I would be expecting Philly versus Milwaukee. But if you're betting on who's going to win the East, the best bet is no question the Sixers right now.
Miami actually in fifth with +1,000 is interesting. I think a dark horse, though, and I don't think they will win the conference, but some team to watch out for is always the Boston Celtics. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum playing well together. I think their depth is really just their issue.
Tatum was terrible today, though, in the head-to-head matchup with Bradley Beal. Beal at 35, Tatum at 6.
Yeah, he does that every now and again, though, and people get on his case, and then he drops 40 the next game, and it's like, okay,
but you can't be having those off days in the conference finals, man, and he definitely had those off days in the conference. I mean, he had scoreless halves against the Heat last year.
Yeah, and then he popped off for 30, though. So, like,
did they win any of those games? No.
Yeah. All right. The West is very interesting. Obviously, the two LA teams are the clear-cut favorites. Jazz in third with +650. Dude, I'm honestly, I hate to be that asshole, but I think I have to say the Lakers.
Dude, it's you don't question that. Like, it is going to be the Lakers. You're not going to make money if you're betting on the Western Conference this year. Like, the Lakers are not only the clear favorite to win the West, they're the clear favorite to win the NBA championship. And, you know, I know we were supposed to talk about that, but
of course, yeah.
The big question is who they play, because it's just so hard to bet against LeBron at least getting to the conference final. And I think LA, the other LA team, is the safe bet, and I think it's probably the most likely to happen. But if we're talking about like a dark horse type, you got to mention Phoenix. Chris Paul has them playing excellent basketball out there. And then Utah. You have to mention Utah. They've played an excellent brand of basketball, and if they kind of take on the moniker that Denver did last year, where they just play their absolute best basketball as long and as hard as they possibly can until there's someone's sex tape, they're going to find success. They're gonna go far. And I believe that under the right circumstances and maybe with the right matchups, we could very well see them there. They're the team that I would bet if I'm not taking the two LA teams.
Well, I tend to agree with that. There are a few dark horses, but I think in the end, consistency is going to reign supreme. And I do think the Lakers, while they are the favorite, I think are the smartest bet, at least as of now. Jazz, to be determined. But now, being a sports bettor, of course, sometimes you like to extend your range of possibilities of what you know. So I'm going to challenge you right now.
Okay.
Today is a very important day, not because it's another day where I'm alone, but it is a day where one of the greatest sporting events is occurring right now. Do you know what that is?
Man.
Well, Robbie is a terrible sports fan. Robbie is the Daytona 500, an absolute staple of sports.
You know, I saw that Bubba Wallace's car failed twice, so I should have known the answer to this, but wow, I'm mad at NASCAR. Sorry. If there's any NASCAR fans out there, I apologize. I do not keep up to date with that one.
So this is going to be a fun next bit. Robbie, first of all, if you bet on NASCAR and pick the winner right, even the most favored person is like a 5-to-1 favorite. So it's, you can make a lot of money if you pick the proper person. I gotta say, Robbie, who do you think is going to win the Daytona 500 today? And if you can give me a NASCAR driver who is operational, I will be shocked.
I was about to say, I don't know if Bubba Wallace's car works.
So. We're going to ignore him because I think his car is not working. But if it is...
I actually think it did pass the third inspection, but he got moved to the back of the pack. Gosh, I don't even know if I can name another guy in the race, to be completely honest.
Come on, you can do it. Believe.
Oh, man. My phone is not near me to try and cheat this one either. Oh gosh,
this is like your worst nightmare trivia.
Like, I don't, man, I got nothing for you.
All right, well, as a avid NASCAR fan compared to Robbie, more so that I've watched NASCAR probably in the past 15 years at some point, I'm feeling Kyle Busch today.
He's still there. Cool. Let's go with Kyle Busch.
All right, Kyle Busch, lock it in. And if he wins, well, then you're to your first. But to anyone listening, we will definitely continue this. We are super excited to be partnered with Viget. Thank you. We are going to be doing more of this in the near future, so stay posted and help support us by using our referral code to sign up. We'll have tons of giveaways, tons of prizes, and I got to see the March Madness capabilities because I really would love to do something there. And I think that's just like we did in high school. Like, it's a fun time to see who's the smartest of the smarts when it comes to randomness.
Usually not who you'd expect, given the randomness. All right. One more segment here. We like to do our superlatives, and we are going to continue with that. You know, we had a lot of big sporting events, Super Bowl, lots of basketball. So we're going to go in here. We're going to start, as always, with the MVP of the week. And I'm going to start it out with championship Tom Brady, MVP. 7 Super Bowls. I just want to, so the 49ers and the Cowboys each have 5 Super Bowls. The Pittsburgh Steelers and the New England Patriots both have 6. And the franchise that is Tom Brady now has 7 Super Bowls. A fantastic performance. All I was hearing all game two is that he impacts the coaching aspect of things just as much as the on-field playing. So Tom Brady, definitively the best football player of all time.
Yeah, part of me wants to just put my fist in my mouth, but I can't. I got to say Tom Brady as well. I don't hate him as much now that he's out of New England. I don't have to hear Boston fans talk about him nonstop.
Nice.
But I always like good Super Bowl games. We all do. And this one, unfortunately, was a bit of a dud. Not that that matters, because obviously you want to win a championship. You don't care if it's a blowout or a close game. As a sports fan who just needs his endorphin rush, I always love a good close game. But Tom Brady, undisputed GOAT, 7 Super Bowls, still doing it. It's wild, though, that his 3 Super Bowl losses are to Eli Manning, and Nick Foles, 3 quarterbacks who, I mean, they're, I love Nick Foles. I love Eli Manning, but it's hard to be like, wow, he's beaten Pat Mahomes. He's beaten Matt Ryan. He's beaten Russell Wilson. And the list goes on and on with Kurt Warner, like, et cetera. And those are the 3 he's lost to. So congrats, Tom. I hope you're drinking a little bit more tequila and chilling for the off season.
We're cooling on it. You know, he might need a day or a week off after that part.
I wonder how his hangover was, to be quite honest with you. I can't imagine, even as 22, like the occasional times I drink, like being removed from college, it's like, huh, I'm soft. And I can't imagine a 43-year-old drinking and being like, I feel good right now.
Right. Yeah, the thoughts going through his mind must have been nutty. Tom Brady, though, 7-time champ. Both of our MVPs. Moving on, the most disappointing player, team, whatever you want to call it. Who disappointed you this week?
You know, this is a little bit of bias, but I got to say the Warriors. And the Warriors have been playing well. Like, Steph Curry is looking to be, like, obviously another all-star. But they played the Nets last night. And the Nets kind of, I don't know, rock them is probably the best word to describe them. It bums me out to a degree that this team who, like, you know, Klay Thompson can't play. You have Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Kelly Oubre. I was hoping they would do a bit more against this Nets team, especially due to their defensive incapabilities, you know, from Brooklyn side. But the Nets are obviously a scary threat. And I was a bit disappointed that the game wasn't a bit more exciting, I guess.
Yeah. Kevin Durant's return to the Bay Area, first game in that arena. I guess he never played in that arena, but playing against the Warriors in their home building since he left. Yeah, we'll see what comes of the Warriors season. I mean, Steph Curry's pretty much the only guard they have on roster, so we'll see how that goes down. My most disappointing, this may feel like a cheap shot, it's going to be the Chiefs offensive line. Man, they were the reason the Super Bowl was not fun. Like, at the end of the day, Pat Mahomes, like we said at the beginning of the show, was doing everything he could to keep his team in the game. But at the end of the day, on a bum foot, he had to run more yards than he threw for, just trying to scramble away from blitzers. It's unacceptable at that level, at the highest level of the NFL. You expect better, you deserve better, and fans deserve better too. So my most disappointing this week was the Kansas City offensive line. Got the bad boy of the week now, always a favorite of ours. Mine, I don't want this to sound like my Hawks bias, but I'm giving it to Trae Young for that $20,000 fine he got. I'm not just kind of trying to shit on Trae Young here. The reason I want to do this is because I'm giving him this award, is because you have to know how to argue in the NBA. You can be flamboyant, you can be throwing your arms around and clearly heated, but it's the words that come out of your mouth and how you say them to the ref that actually matter. And clearly he said something that he shouldn't have, or he was just aggressively arguing way more than necessary. So to the young guy, you just kind of had to learn how to not lose your cool as much, you know, stay whelmed, as I always like to say. Like, you got to understand that arguing with the refs at the end of the day is always futile. You are almost never going to change a call on the floor. So just take it in stride and understand that even if it loses you a game, it's not always going to go your way.
My bad boy of the week, and I guess I would have to say bad girl of the week, but also this is kind of a questionable stretch. I'm going to go with the fast food chain Wendy's. I know you're like, what's like, okay, what's going on here? Are you losing it? I'm like, no. So if anyone is not familiar with Wendy's social media team on Twitter, they're some of the most savage people you will ever meet. And lo and behold, the Rays baseball team posted something, you know, just a post on social media. And apparently it was National Roast Day a few days ago. And Wendy's tweeted back at the Tampa Bay Rays, unprovoked to my knowledge, saying, "We're surprised you didn't pull your social media manager in the middle of writing that great tweet with a photo of Blake Snell." And to me, that is the most savage thing a fast food chain has done in the world of sports in just far too long. And I absolutely love it. Wendy's, you've been a bad girl, and I put a question mark there because you're an entity, so I don't know if I can gender you like that. But wow, just wow.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love when social media is poking each other. It's always good fun, unless it's not. But all right, moving on. Moment of the week here. Best moment from the past week. I do not mean to slander your Sixers here at all, but my moment of the week is actually Carmelo Anthony. In the game this week between Portland and Philadelphia, Carmelo Anthony scored 24 points, which included 16 fourth quarter points. It was just awesome as a basketball fan seeing this older version of Carmelo Anthony take over a game just like he used to. Sixers couldn't stop him no matter who was on him, hitting shots, playing tough defense. It was just awesome. Like I said, as a basketball fan, to see this guy, knowing his journey, he was out of the league, back with Portland, and now hitting clutch shots for a team trying to make another playoff run with the injuries and COVID they've dealt with. He's playing a big role for that team. So my moment of the week was Carmelo Anthony for his late game performance this week against the Sixers.
Yeah, it's actually wild. I completely forgot he was out of the league for basically a year. Like, he was on the Rockets for a bit and then was done for till the following year. Mine goes to Caris LeVert. So as we all have heard, after the trade, the Brooklyn trade, Caris LeVert got sent to the Pacers and did an MRI on him and found like a mass on his kidney. And, you know, he had surgery. So he's doing all good. But the Pacers played the Nets a few days ago. And, you know, it was one of those things. He can't play, at least tentatively. But, like, Kyrie was over there, you know, making sure to see how good he was. And I don't know. It's that brotherhood that I really enjoy about sports, where on the court or on the field, you're trying to just, you know, be the best, you know, beat your opponent. But then after the fact, it's like, you know, you're all humans. And I don't know, to me it was like touching, and it was great to see him like back and like, you know, seeing his old teammates, because I'm sure it was a nice brotherhood in Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure those guys are still going to be friends well beyond the game of basketball. And basically, you know, we heard Caris LeVert basically come out and say that the trade saved his life. Essentially, he wouldn't have found out about this. So yeah, glad to see Kyrie Irving still caring about his friend, wanting to make sure he's doing all right. We do love to see that. His game brings people together, shouldn't separate us. We love that. One more award here on the show, that would be the Return of the King. Alex, who was your Return of the King recipient this week?
I almost want to do like a Return of the Jester, though, because honestly, just to me, that Super Bowl just had all these implications of how these guys were like, just awful. But honestly, I'm going to do a Return of the King, Return of the Jester for the Super Bowl refs. I got to get this off my chest. It's been killing me. Look, I know the Chiefs have been holding the playoffs. I know people hate the Chiefs, and I get that. But some of the calls in that game were so ticky-tacky and were just throwing me out of it. And then I was getting PTSD. I'm like, Tom Brady's getting every call, and I'm just getting more and more upset at the world. Look, it's not a singular ref. It's just the collective that is the NFL referee organization. They are inconsistent. They're not awful, but they need to figure their shit out. And I hope by the time next year rolls around, we're going to have better refs, and we're starting to get a little better, a little more consistent. We're doing better. Everything's a lot, makes sense, understandable, maybe less missed calls. All this. So I just hope for more consistency in sports, but not enough where if a call doesn't go my way, I can, you know, still complain about it and have something to say the Eagles got screwed over by XYZ.
Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, sports tend to put these halos above refs for whatever reason. Like, you're not allowed to slander them, you're not allowed to question their judgment, but it's like they ruin a lot of sporting events. And it's really unfortunate because players and coaches can't really say anything without getting in trouble. But us as fans, it's like we see it because we're watching, and it is never enjoyable when the ref essentially decides the fate of a game, especially, you know, that first half, Kansas City was getting called for a lot, just anything, nothing on the other side of the field. At the end of the day, that's, it's just not how the Super Bowl should go. And I can't imagine it's how it really went. So tough. I agree. Return of the Jester, Super Bowl refs. I do have a Return of the King, though, but sticking with the Super Bowl, my king is Antonio Brown. You know, I had some ill will when he left Pittsburgh just because of how it all went down. But at the end of the day, the man made it to his first Super Bowl. The man caught a touchdown in his first Super Bowl victory. The journey he went on, getting traded to Oakland, getting released by Oakland, playing one game for the Patriots before getting cut. Crazy to think that this man could be a Super Bowl champion. He will be the best receiver on a team next year. I'm certain of it. It's great for him because it sounded like he really got his life back in order. He seems to be doing much better. And again, the man just won the most important football game he's ever played and played an integral part in that. Antonio Brown is my returning king this week for his Super Bowl performance.
Whew.
Yeah, that's the one today. Hope everybody enjoyed the episode. As always, we will be back next week, sponsored yet again. Awesome stuff. Next week, we're going to have another special guest on the show, another podcast guy, a good friend of mine. We'll introduce him more formally next week. Other than that, again, hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we'll be back for you.
Take care, everyone. We really appreciate the support. We're grinning ear to ear because, you know, it's been a tumultuous 6 months with COVID, just the way the world has been. But we hope that throughout this, as you're listening to us the day after Valentine's Day or maybe sometime in the near future, that this podcast has at least given you enjoyment, laughter. Maybe it's made you angry because of how stupid you think we are. But as long as you're getting something out of it, hey, that's what we're here for. But we'll be back next week. Take care, guys. Peace.
Happy Valentine's Day.